Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Writers Panel. I'm Ben Blacker, the creator and moderator of the podcast. I created the show because I wanted to talk to other writers about the business and process of writing. I've had more than 500 writers on the show, so please check the archives to find more writers and more TV shows of interest to you. I'm a writer myself, having written for Supernatural, Puss in Boots, and other programs. I have a couple of cool projects out this first quarter of 2017 that I hope you'll check out. One is a Supernatural Western comic book series from Boom Publishing that I wrote with my writing partner Ben Acker and our friend, the TV showrunner Andrew Miller. It's beautifully illustrated by Hannah Christensen, and the first issue is available in comic stores and online February 8th. In March comes the first book in a series of young adult novels that Acker and I wrote called Star Wars: Join the Resistance. It takes place just before The Force Awakens and is about a bunch of kids who join the fight against the First Order. But mostly they have adventures, fall in love with each other, and get in trouble. I hope you'll check out both of those projects. We're very proud of how they came out. Let me know who you'd like to hear on this podcast by following me on Twitter, at Ben Blacker, like the color, only more so, liking the Writers Panel on Facebook, and visiting writerspanel.tumblr.com. And if you like the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Reading those reviews really provides a pick-me-up.
They write, they talk, and talk about what they write. Tune in tonight, or whenever the time is right. It's the Writers Panel with Ben Blacker, and it's starting now. Oh, yeah!
I mean, you say a lot of things that I regret.
That's how we're going to start. I'm going to leave that in. Guys, we're doing it.
That's usually the case.
This is how we begin. Thank you guys for being here. What I'm going to do is have you introduce yourselves on microphones so the listener can differentiate your voices and tell us some places where they have seen your name on their television. And Amy, let's start with you.
Sure. Hey, my name's Amy Aniobi. I'm a writer-producer on Insecure on HBO. And you may have also seen my name on Silicon Valley Season 2, on Amy Poehler's Smart Girls show Modern Manners, and across the interwebs because I'm an idiot online.
Professionally.
Yeah, professionally.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a good gig. Charles, welcome back.
Hey. Hello. I'm Charles Murray. You've seen me on Luke Cage. You've seen my name, not me, on Luke Cage, Sons of Anarchy, Criminal Minds before I got fired, Castle before I got fired, Daybreak before it got canceled. Third watch before it gets canned.
That's why you say a lot of things that I regret. That's what that means.
I'm sure I've been. Oh, I got fired off V as well.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad we covered that.
Shout out to the showrunner.
My name is Ben Wexler. I took all those jobs that Charles got fired from.
You wish you had that career.
No, exactly. That would be nice. That would be a nice set of credits. All I can claim, I can also claim that Amy, you saw her name on Michael J. Fox show.
This is true.
Which she declined. Yes. Yeah. Notable omission from your credits. Amy.
You ran that one?
No, I did not run that for the record.
I didn't know how far back I should go. No, and I also wanted it to be like, what's our origin story?
Was Michael J. Fox... Wexler, shut up for a second. Yeah, was Michael J. Fox your first staff job?
Yeah, it was.
It was. Uh-huh. Were you like assistanting and stuff
Yes,
before
I was. I was on Happy Ending Season 3. Right. And then I was on Yeah, it's a great show. Rest in peace. Pour one out. But I was also on a couple of pilots before that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you... Guys, I'm going to talk to Amy for a while.
I'm used to this.
Did you?
<Little whisper>.
So you were like sort of kicking around assistanting.
I want to.
Were you writing your own stuff at that time, during that time while you were an assistant?
Yeah, a ton. So like when I went to grad school at UCLA for the screenwriting program. And when I graduated, I started working on a web series called Awkward Black Girl, mm-hmm. which was run and starred and written by Issa Rae. Yeah. And she also is the star and producer of Insecure, which is a show I work on now. So that was kind of like my first like writer's room job. Like, we would meet up, and there were five of us, and we'd break story together and write it. And I was like, love this.
I didn't realize she ran that with an actual little writer.
Yeah. That's halfway cool. through season one, we sold to Pharrell's YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. So we, like, got paid and everything. I mean, like, not really. Like, enough to get really fancy sandwiches. But
what
it was
a great
really
way
cool.
to figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah. And then from there, I started working for a couple showrunners. I worked for Wendy Calhoun, who mm-hmm. worked on Justified. And she was making an independent project, so I was her assistant. And then I worked for Hillary Winston, who later worked on Happy Endings. So that's how she introduced me to the crew at Happy Endings.
These are all sort of wildly different things. Like, there's a lot of comedy there, but Wendy Calhoun doesn't do comedy.
It was a comedy project that she was working on. Yeah.
Interesting. So you knew you wanted to be in comedy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. From the beginning, I was just like, I like dick jokes, so I feel like I can explore that more.
Sure.
And be paid for it on the comedy side as opposed to being shunned.
What was the material that sort of launched you to that first staff job? Do you remember?
I really think it was because after Awkward Black Girl, I started my own web series called The Slutty Years. And it was about nerd girls who weren't sluts. But the title, guys, to this day, we get a lot of links from, like, Russia. And I'm like, it's just like old men in Russia who are like, oh, The Slutty Years. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. But, I made that web series and just to learn how to do it myself. Mm-hmm. And then, like, while I was doing that, I was working on Happy Endings. And then I was applying to all those programs that people apply to. And I was a finalist 1 year. And then the next year I got accepted to three of them. And I was like, I just emailed a friend who was an assistant at an agency and was like, so here are all the things that I've done. Do you think I'm ready for an agent? And then luckily they agreed that yes, I was. And so I came in and took a meeting and signed. And then from there I was just like, you know, networking.
Right. You get sent around, you meet all the people.
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of material by the time you
got
an agent?
Yeah. Because, like, when I was in grad school, it was like you wrote a feature every quarter, and then I was in the TV program, so it was a feature and a spec, or a feature and a pilot.
That's
great. And then I was like crazy and was like, I have to make this work because, like, I'm Nigerian and my family was like, why aren't you a doctor? And so I felt like I was becoming like the wrong kind of nerd that my parents wanted, and I was like, how do I correct this and still be nerdy about writing? And
the new Jamaican.
Yeah.
12 jobs.
Exactly. I was definitely Jamaican and not getting paid. So I had, like, I don't know. By the time I got an agent, I would say like five specs, like seven pilots, and then these two web series. And so,
that's wild.
I was not sleeping.
No. I think she has more material than Ben and I do.
Seriously.
Now.
I mean, you don't want to read any of this stuff. At the time, I was like, I'm so talented. And now I'm like, I go back and read some of it, and I'm like, gross. Just flat gross.
It's clearly someone responded to this material.
Took pity on me. They're like, she's trying so hard.
But there's something, like, look, you learn by doing it, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think this is something we've really talked about with you guys, sort of about those early years and the kind of material you were turning out then. Like, Charles, what was the early stuff that you did that sort of
it was the
got
stuff that
noticed?
Ben hated.
Well, that's not limited to the
well,
early
wait.
Stuff.
We should say, you guys have known each other for
a long time.
20, 25 years,
yeah,
20 years?
Jesus was a baby.
Yeah. We were assistants.
But talk about why, because we were talking about this downstairs, and I think it's worth mentioning.
Well, Charles and I were assistants together in the movie division. By the way, I like how the only credits I gave were just one extra Amy credit.
Yeah.
and I'm actually okay with that.
He's had no jobs otherwise. I hired him.
I really have had no jobs. Just,
the listener has
assistant,
Google.
Assistant with Charles, and I know Amy's friends. Those are my jobs. We were assistants at Touchstone. Well, you were at Disney. I was at Touchstone, as I recall.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
And this was in the 90s, and we had, it turns out, we were just talking downstairs, a fairly a class of luminaries who were assistants at that time who kind of went on to do bigger and better things, which is very cool. But we've been friends for a shockingly long time. Just a shockingly long time.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because you think about how long you, like, friendships have seasons in this town. So you kind of, like, see somebody and then you wave at him for the rest of your career. But he and I and Brigham and Haynes
Yeah.
I'd say that little group of assistants, we've been consistent and constant in our friendship.
Yeah. That's great. Was this
in
for
other
both?
Words, we haven't pissed each other off.
Right. We haven't worked together.
Yeah. And thank God he does comedy and I do drama.
Exactly.
So it's the best.
Was this the first industry job for both of you?
No, not for me. Probably not for you either, right?
No, it was.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
For me, I'd been a casting assistant on a lot of different movies.
Really?
The first one was Forrest Gump, actually.
Wow.
Weirdly,
that's my
first credit.
You just
that's my first on screen. Well, actually, you know what? The weird thing is, we had to cast the kid who was going to play Robin Wright and Tom Hanks' son.
Yeah.
And we saw literally probably thousands of kids between like the Georgia casting and this kid walks in with his mom, 4 years old, totally looks like he could be their kid.
Oh my God.
And he just looks at me, he's like, hello, how are you? Like these kids, because most of these kids can't put two words together. And this 4-year old, like super. And I walk into my boss and I'm like, we just found him. And that was the kid. And that kid's name? Haley Joel Osment.
What?
So there's your Forrest Gump story.
That's beautiful.
If it wasn't for Ben, there would be no Sixth Sense.
If it wasn't for me,
there would be
if
no
it wasn't
second
for me, my boss
lions.
Would have been like, yeah, that's the kid. my boss would have been like, yeah, that's so
I
clear.
Gave
it's
you
so
sixth
obvious.
Sense,
yeah.
You're
yeah.
welcome.
Yeah. You did a good job shaking the kid's hand in the hall. I don't know.
Good eye, Ben.
Yeah,
good eye.
Way to sign him in, I guess. Good, nice job with the clipboard.
So you kicked around on some of those as casting assistants?
Yeah, just to keep, you know, I mean, while I was doing my whatever 8 or 9 spec scripts.
Well, yeah. What
was
your version of that?
It was the same. It was the same as Amy's. Yeah. I didn't do it in grad school. I just did it while I was while I was doing these odd jobs, you know, and just sort of paying the rent.
And was it all? Were you writing all comedy? Were you writing original stuff? Were you writing specs of existing shows?
Well,
that is what we did back
then.
This
is back in the 90s where you would write a Seinfeld and a Simpsons and you know what I mean. Like so, and that was, by the way, a lot easier. I don't know if you know, Kramer's very funny. like just writing the jokes for Kramer is just very, you know, it's a lot easier than like actually having to invent a funny character. So, yeah. So, I mean, and it has actually informed my staffing now, because when I read somebody's like Sunny in Philadelphia, you're like, oh, it's really funny because that's a really funny
right,
show.
Exactly.
Well, I've heard both ways on this.
Yeah.
And in fact, just a minute ago, we were talking about this with the last people in here. But, like, there is something to the specs of existing shows, which is that's essentially the job of a staff writer.
Totally.
Is mimic
correct.
The showrunner's voice, right?
Yeah.
And nobody writes specs anymore. Everybody,
which is so weird to
anymore.
Me, because I do sort of feel like, I mean, most pilots when you're green are bad. Actually, most pilots when you're good are bad.
That,
you know, it's just
so
hard to write a pilot.
The best pilot I've ever is terrible.
Yeah. I'm just like, I read it, I'm like, gross. So I just think that, like, it's weird that we moved away from people writing specs when it's actually, I think, the best training to get good at being in a room. So that when your boss is like, hey, can you turn this around in 3 days because we're behind schedule and production's all weird, and you can say, yeah, because I've done it by myself, so it's so much easier for me to do it with 12 of my friends.
Yeah.
You know?
So I am finally admitting that that is partly a mission of this podcast, is to get people to write
specs
again.
Back.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, did you do the, like, fellowships and those things?
Sort of, yeah.
You do have to do them for that.
Yeah, exactly. So I applied to them, like, 3 years in a row, and the third year I did get into a few of them, and then I got staffed before I completed them.
I
didn't end up. But it was great.
Awesome.
I was like, thanks for letting in someone who was going to get staffed. Like, part of me was kind of like, you should be letting in greener people. I was, like, frustrated that I hadn't gotten into it the year before, you know? But I think they just want, like, a success rate. So I think there is a little bit like, oh, you know, 9 showrunners, you should be in the program, you know?
God.
But, I don't know.
Anyway, we were saying, so, Charles, when you were an assistant in this feature division, were you writing your own stuff? Did you know you wanted to write?
Yeah, I was writing
features. You were?
Yeah. I had no idea that I would ever take a shot at television until all the black cinema dried up. And I went, oh, we're in trouble. Because nobody wants to read these now.
What were you writing? What was the kind of stuff?
Just like action stuff, you know, dramas, anything. I
made a couple of shorts, right?
Well, not until later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I had, when I lived in San Francisco before I moved here, I had worked as a AD on like student films and, you know, PA'd and stuff like that. So I was so indie minded You know, I was just like, I just want to be in the Hal Hartley, you know, Spike, Nick Gomez lane of making movies for like $150,000 and, you know, eating top ramen. So the majority of the films that I wrote were contained, you know, dramas. And so when I got here and people were saying, hey, you should write, try television. I was like, get out of here. I'm going back to Chicago. I'm going to take over. I'm going to work with John Hughes and make indie films. And then
we're old enough to remember when movies were like way better than television.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, that is the thing, right? Just 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Although it's always been a fallacy, because if you look back at that time, you had Hill Street, you had St. Elsewhere.
Right.
You know, so it's.
Well, that's when to be fair, that's when I was a kid. That's when I was a small child.
You were a baby.
I do not recall. I've been told of this.
I've heard of those shows,
I've
sure.
I've seen people
my parents
interview
watched
about them.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing for me was I had no formal education. I went to Columbia College for a semester in Chicago, and then Reagan said, give me your Social Security money, so I had to hit streets. You know,
literally, physically, he came up to you.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Give me that money. And so I just always, my hero at the time was Preston Sturges.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always thought, if I could write like him, someone will hire me. You know,
which that's a good goal. And
yeah,
that's
but it
not
never
a bad
happened.
Way to
I
think.
Can't write like it. That's the only problem.
It gave you something to aspire
yeah,
to.
Absolutely,
for
yeah,
sure.
You know.
But that's interesting, like to be inspired by that stuff and then wind up writing these sort of indie. I assume they were dramas.
Yeah,
and then later action stuff, more Hollywood style things.
Pretty much. I had a strange blip. Actually, you know what? The first screenplay I ever read was The Exorcist because it was published when I was 9.
Oh, my God.
There were so few.
Right.
That's amazing.
Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
And then
I
the next one I read was Indiana Jones. I mean, Raiders, which I stole from Walden Books. I'm really sorry.
Walden. They're coming for you. They listen to this podcast.
Listen, I can afford it now.
Cut a check.
Yeah. Barely.
Make checks payable, too.
But when I was living in Texas working at 7-Eleven.
Where in Texas?
Where
in Texas?
I'm learning stuff about you.
Oh, I'm from Allen, like Dallas.
Okay,
20
yeah,
minutes
yeah,
north.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I used to, break into the Los Colinas studio.
Yeah. And, I've been there.
And walk the stages.
Yeah, I did that. What?
And
you broke into the very same studio?
I didn't break in. I was a kid, but my parents took me there, and I just wandered.
You stole Rod Stewart.
For my friend. Yeah,
I did not do that.
This podcast is bringing out a lot of stolen items that you're going to have.
Criminal background.
What's the statute of limitations on
that kind of stealing? Very short. But I will say to 7-Eleven, I do owe you gas money.
This podcast was a horrible decision.
It really was. This is evidence
Charles
now.
Murray, jail.
Man, it's like he's testifying.
Hey, Ben, if you could cut that out.
Just the Fifth Amendment extend to podcasts.
Yes, Trump. I am your worst nightmare.
I'm coming for you, Trump.
But I wrote a Lethal Weapon ripoff.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I made the two characters Asian and white. And I sent it to a friend who actually gave it to a producer. And the next thing you know, I'm flying from 7-Eleven.
Straight out of 7-Eleven.
To L.A.
That's crazy.
And I met with the development head at Davis Pictures, John Goldwyn, when he was number two at MGM, and some guy over at Warner Brothers, and I had no clue what I was doing.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
How did you even, what was your friend doing that you even got into those hands?
My friend's father was a doctor who knew.
Oh, my God.
Oh, fantastic.
I love this.
Who knew this woman's father, and she was a producer, or fake producer, here at the time. She literally put her name on my script.
Wait, as as producer?
No.
As writer?
As writer.
Are you to see if they would actually notice, or because she was like, it's
because
so good,
she was like,
I'm
this is the way, this is the way you get in, you know.
I've heard about this happening. I've never heard it from a first-person account.
But she did it after I had the meetings. The people responded so well to my script that she was like, oh, we should go out with this, and she... And that was the first person that ever got cursed out by me.
The first of many.
Not the last.
That'll probably happen today.
No. We're going to make it out.
Most recent. Look to your left. Look to your right. One of us will be cursed out by Charles.
It's funny game. And so the John Goldwyn said to me, I really love your script. What do you want to do? And because I had no idea, I'm like, I'm sitting in a movie studio talking to the guy who can, like, hire me, right? And I said, I want to write Running Scared 2, the Gregory Hines, Billy Crystal.
Oh, my God.
That is, and he said, so cool.
We literally hired someone 3 weeks ago to do it, or we would have hired you. And I thought, okay, thank you, I appreciate it. And he told me, he gave me his assistant's number, and he said, if you ever write anything else that you think we should do, call my assistant. And I went back to Texas. Texas became San Francisco. And I wrote A Black Pygmalion. And I found his phone number, his assistant's phone number, and I called and I said, yeah, this ain't going to work. And he had moved from MGM to Paramount. And they gave me the forwarding number. I talked to his assistant. I said, I don't know if he remembers me. I was working at a bookstore at the time.
So what was the gap in time, by the way?
This was like 3-4 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm a slow writer. I don't have five.
Right, you're not doing a dozen things.
Again, like Amy, they suck.
Amy would have been back like the following Monday. I actually have a Black Pygmalion.
I also have Alyssa Strata.
Right. Yeah.
There's no Jamaican, Nigerian, Nairobian, nothing in me. There's just lazy American. But I called him and I said, I don't know if he'll remember me, blah, blah, blah. 2 hours later, a creative executive from Paramount called me.
That's so good.
And she read the script. She said she took the script unsolicited, gave it to Arsenio Hall's company, and they tried to set it up, but they felt there were no black stars at the time that could have gone into the picture.
Interesting.
What? So I was, what year was that?
Yeah.
This was when A Different World was like in its second season or something like that. And I was like, just put the cast over there.
It's done.
And, but nothing.
Do I have to do everything?
Nothing ever followed up to become something else.
Right.
Yeah. So I moved from San Francisco. I'm living in the projects. This is the best part. What? Living in the projects. My sister had breast cancer. So I was with her helping to raise her kids. She moved back to Indiana. I'm living in the projects, going to the bookstore. I come home. The joint's been broken into.
Oh, my God.
Oh no. Something straight out of Friday.
Wait, you're in San Francisco at this point? Or
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, living out by the Cow Palace.
Yep.
And I'm sitting on the steps of the front door's been kicked in. And I'm sitting on the steps going, what the hell am I doing? And this guy comes riding by on my mountain bike. And he's like, yo, what's up?
Do never return to the scene of the crime.
And please.
Not all the stuff you stole.
Do you live underneath you?
We had 11-year-old dope dealers, so.
Oh, God.
And I said, that's my bike. And he says, yeah, man, you know, the door was open. What was I supposed to do?
Right.
And I said, that's my bike. And he said, it can be yours for $25.
Oh, no. I'm so mad and impressed. I am both angry and I love him.
And I bought it back.
Don't you wish you had that sense of enterprise?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Bought it back.
I bought it back. And, I, you know, had they fixed the door and I was like, I got to get out of here.
Was this guy bigger than you?
No.
Possession is 9/10.
Yeah. When you have an 11-year-old dope dealer named Pop,
you don't know what's happening.
You can't.
Yeah.
You don't know who he is.
And then when late at night, you look out of your window and there's a woman whooping a dude's ass.
Yeah.
It's the Wild West.
And that, by the way, I'm that dude in that situation.
Yeah,
99 times out of 10.
So
that's intentional.
I moved to L.A.,
that was the line for
you. You were like,
I'm fine with living in the projects, but I will not be robbed and sold my own.
I think that's fair.
What about your sister's kids?
They were back. Back with her in Indiana. And so I moved to L.A. I'm not moving to stay. I'm moving to move back home.
Right. Gary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm going to go back to school. Because the only other thing I ever wanted to do was teach high school. So I was going to go back, get a degree in drama, and teach at my old high school. That was the plan. And I come out to L.A. to say goodbye to a friend of mine. I don't have a car. I'm 29 years old. And a friend of mine, Martin Phillips, who's one of the most awesome human beings on the planet, sent me a check to buy a car.
Wow.
So I go buy the car.
Wow.
And a friend of mine from San Francisco is working at Disney. Mm-hmm. And he says, hey, they're hiring for messengers. And I went, okay, I'll save up some money.
Right.
And then bounce.
Yeah.
I have a car now.
Yeah, I have a car now. Right.
Yeah,
the one thing I need.
I'm the perfect messenger.
My apologies to the guy who I ran into while parked and drove off.
Charles, that was me.
He had a car, but he did not know how to drive it.
I knew how to drive it. It was like the dude said something to
me. This is more of a confessional than a podcast.
It really is.
I'm glad you could be here for this.
Guys, we're getting a lot out. Father, it feels good.
Father, forgive me for my sin.
We're here to let you absolve.
I'm glad to be here for the end of your friendship. Special moment.
Way to sing a really special moment.
Trust me, that's not...
Yeah, if it hasn't ended by now.
Where are we?
You have this car, and you got this messenger job.
Yeah, I get the messenger job.
You have a Thomas guide.
Yeah. No. It was a messenger job off the lot.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the day I got hired, it was on the lot.
Okay.
They transferred me on the lot, and that's how
they didn't want you driving around.
What did I do with this car?
Right.
I need it.
Trust me, I did a lot with that car. Stick them up. No.
Stole a lot of bikes with that
car.
A lot. Yeah.
That same bike got stolen later.
That's amazing.
Did you buy it back?
No.
I wound up putting $10,000 in my bike.
Right? I put a hit out on the person.
Still on the bike.
I still have payments on that bike.
But that's where I met
Brigham.
You.
Me.
That's where I met Ben. That's where I met Brig, Michael Haynes, and a slew of other people. And
Brigham is Brigham Taylor, by the way, who's a big producer now.
Yeah, he produced Jungle Book.
Yeah,
and
one of our dearest friends. Yeah,
and things got really tragic. My nephew was killed. I went back home, and while I was back home, Brigham called me and said, "There's an assistance gig open." There were two open at the time, and I went in and interviewed for both of them. Greg Hoffman, that wasn't going to happen immediately. And Jeff Bynum, who hired me. And that's when we all kind of like came together. So during that time, I was only writing features. That was a long ass answer to say I was.
Oh, man.
Well, there's a lot of questions in there. Yeah, it's a great story, first of all. Yeah.
So many crimes confessed.
Yes.
So, like.
Oh.
Not even all of them.
Then there was Watergate.
Yeah. How far back do you want to go?
Nothing now.
That's nothing now.
Watergate? Yes,
exactly.
Watergate.
And I do not know Putin. No. Anybody in Russia.
Well, he knows you.
He's not wearing a name tag.
He's a fan.
Or Putin.
So you come back here 30 years old.
Yeah. 30.
Interviewing for these assistant positions, which puts you like 5 years older than probably a lot of the other assistants.
6 to 7.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. So how are – like you're a person. You know, you're not some kid who's just shown up in Hollywood
like
looking for a job.
You indicate me immediately, which
well,
is
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
I was a child.
Yeah. As, you know, probably most of the listeners who are going for these jobs. But I'm curious to hear, like, you're a person. You've had a life. You've had experiences. How do these interviews go? You know? Like, what do you... You want to make a good impression.
You're, like, older, but you're
They would go either...
Like, how do you
well
carry because, yourself then?
You know, because I was older than the people I was interviewing with. You know, my whole thing was, we may not have many things in common, but you're not going to... not be able to acknowledge my love for film and television, you know. I mean, because I, while I didn't have a formal education, I was constantly in the libraries, you know, and subscribing to all kind of film magazines and reading tons and tons of autobiographies, you know. And on the directing side, Billy Wilder was one of my favorite directors. You know, so I know their histories, you know. So, while we had nothing in common in terms of age, you know, usually if someone loved film,
sure,
then there was a connection.
Yeah,
you know. So, that kind of, I leveraged that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's also even like that and also the willingness to do the job? Because I think sometimes they're afraid that when you're older that you won't be like, I'll go get coffee. Yeah. And I think even expressing like, I love everything about this industry and what I'm doing. And I also really am okay with doing this stuff that like a 22-year-old would be asked to
do. But absolutely. I wasn't.
So. I was going to say, I was 22 and I was utterly unwilling.
Well, you know.
Listen, but you don't say that in the meeting.
No, you lie. Yeah, I'll take two.
Thank you.
No, you don't say it in the meeting, but I mean, I had never been around administrative stuff like that. You know, I clerked, but I had never been.
Yeah, you worked in retail, which is a lot of shitty work.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you know,
so
it's
I understood the shitty work part, and I knew what it that if I stayed true to doing what they needed, maybe it could lead to what I wanted.
Sure.
But when I realized it didn't lead to what I wanted, I was like, bounce.
God, I just had this flash of one of the things we were responsible for was like the commencement papers. Yeah. You know, when they would hire a writer, you'd you as the assistant would have to type up or whatever commencement form.
That's
would, the thing that would get the writer paid.
Right.
And I just fucking never did it. Like I was weeks late. Weeks late. I know. I'm that guy. I'm that asshole. Who,
where's
like,
the,
we can
where's
say
the paperwork, Charles?
Yeah. Like I was like, oh shit, I forgot to. Like for weeks, I was. Like, this is my confessional, but I was probably responsible for, like,
so
scores of writers not getting paid for, like, 6 months after.
Missing their house payments.
I don't even complain when I'm late getting paid like, because I know,
you know
we did it to so many people.
Yeah.
Like, Brig and I.
It wasn't malicious. It was just like, there were articles to read, you know? There were
there was barely an internet.
There was a newspaper. There was, like, you know, papyrus.
But Brig and I would call each other and go, time for a walk. And
completely.
We would put the phone, we would send them straight to voicemail. And then we'd go sit out on the bench.
Oh, we were the worst assistants.
Right? We were horrible.
We were so bad.
We started this conversation saying how your whole class of assistants has really made
our
it.
Rock
we
stars,
have.
Yeah. Titans of industry.
Hold on. We are. But
you were terrible assistants.
We're not speaking for everybody.
All right.
Except for Brigham.
Brigham was a terrible assistant. We used to have Brigham's Mormon. He doesn't drink. And I would, every Friday at about 4:30, I'd be like, it's cocktail hour. And we would have those Calistogas,
oh
you know, like the sparkly ones. We would just put very like, you know, very like civilized style.
Yeah.
I think you were a part of that.
Yeah.
And just, we would just sit and just talk. Just like, let's sit and visit for an hour.
Yeah.
It's Friday.
Can
guys,
I tell you
come
something
on.
That was awesome? He and Brig, this was so amazing. When an assistant would leave, they would make short films.
Yes, we would.
About the assistant as they were leaving.
And there was no editing technology to speak of at the time, so we would do VCR to VCR.
Absolutely.
Like you would do tape deck to tape deck cutting.
Yeah.
And we put together this tribute for Charles.
Oh.
That was, oh my
where
God. I don't
it?
Even know
does
how.
It
I
exist?
Have it somewhere. I got to get it digitized because
it
is.
So awesome.
And it's like, you know, I'm like the on camera.
He's the on camera. Yeah.
Oh,
he's
man.
A news reporter.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Funny.
But I mean, we had such fun, and our bosses knew we were just wild and wacky.
They absolutely did. They really did. I don't think they had that much to do.
No.
Because they were junior executives, and they were just like, yeah. But I did here's the thing that I, like, to this day, people tell me about when I run into them from those years. I used to do this thing. My friend Dave Globke, who I went to high school with, Globke. It's a one of the great comedy names.
Yeah.
It's a name.
Is he a Mel Brooks character?
Yes.
Okay. Truth be told, he may be a Mel Brooks character. He was an assistant on another desk. We just happened to be, you know, and it was the early days of interoffice email. It was like really, really early days of email.
Yeah.
And so what we would do, we started this folder in our email just called the quote file. And what we would do is, like, if he was on a different floor from me, and so if a senior executive would walk by and say something jackass ridiculous, you would type it up, send it to Globke.
Yep.
Right? And it would be like, one of the best quote that I can remember verbatim is the president of the division, he's walking by my cubicle and he goes, listen, you know, we're going to do what we're going to do, and it'll be what it'll be, and at the end of the day, the ship is going to sail. Like, that was, like, that was the whole thing. Like, you know, like, I don't know who he was talking to. Yeah, I was like, and so I was like, no, type, you know, like, this is gold. Oh, my God. And so at the end of my tenure there, this is after Charles had left, I just, on my way out, I'm like, I just printed it all up.
Great.
Just like typed it all up, made copies as a gift to all the other assistants on my last day, right? Just handed them out, the quote file, like with a big. And within 20 minutes, those things had been distributed, physically distributed, copied, and physically distributed to the highest echelons of the company. Of course. Like, oh, you know what I mean? Like to the point that Donald DeLine, who ran, you know, who's like the president of the whole thing, is standing in the fucking conference room with us, just reading, chuckling. You know what I mean? Like, he's quoted, you know, and Todd Garner, who was like the senior VP at the time, standing next to me, had never talked to me the whole time I had worked there. He's like reading it, chuckling. He just turns to me and goes, you're leaving the business, right?
You're like, no, I'm gonna write
company. 23 skidoo. Oh man. It was, but like people, literally, people are. That's a thing that people.
That's hilarious.
Oh God, it was so much.
I want to ask you guys, and Amy, I'm gonna ask you the same question. Working as assistants, and even some of the earliest jobs that you had, what did that teach you about this business, and what have you sort of taken with you from those experiences?
I can defer to Amy because we just talked for a long time.
I would say one is almost like order of events, like process. Mm-hmm. I think that people who have been assistants understand, like, that if this script doesn't get turned in, these departments don't get it and they can't start their work and da-da. They know, like, there's a process, and I feel like, you know, from the outside, like, if you're just writing something and then you're just like, it gets made. But I learned, like, if you write an explosion, that costs money, and then there are rehearsals, and then there are, and so I was like, it helped me figure out how to write smaller and not to be like, I don't know what should happen. Let's add a new character. And I'm like, well, that would actually be another $5,000 a day because they're talking and whatever. So it was just, it helped me learn process in a way that I think did positively impact my writing.
That makes a lot of sense.
Under Matt Nix, too.
Who's
very good about...
He's incredible. And, like, I remember, like, when I was in grad school, I did these internships, and I worked for Matt Nix as an intern, and I got to see someone who... he had not worked in television before Burn Notice, but by this point, I think it was, like, season 5 or 6 of Burn Notice that I interned on. So he was incredibly good at process. And, like, and also he did the showrunner training program, right.
He's a real production guy, too.
Yeah, exactly, because he came up through the indie circuit and knows all that stuff. So it was just, like, watching him figure things out, and someone would pitch something that sounds awesome, and he would immediately be able to go, well, this affects this, 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 and the other thing, so do we really need this, you know? And I was just like, oh, you're really good at your job.
Slash creativity killer, let's face it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, hey, wet blanket, Nixie over there.
Ben and Matt friendship.
Two friendships.
I just brought him up just so I can stop being friends with him.
You have a list.
Yeah, exactly.
You brought with you, which is weird.
I've got some reckonings with enemies to hit on
boy.
Matt, he's one of my best friends, I should
say. Listen, we're cutting that part out.
Yeah, good.
So for you guys...
When I win the lottery.
Working as assistants.
I wish I could cut things out of my life. Like, moments. Yeah. We're cutting it out.
Yeah, let's cut that out. That's amazing.
Cut that out. Oh, like, that would be
just like
so
drunk
helpful.
Cut.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we're friends again.
Just have the good parts.
Yeah.
Something terrible happened. No, it didn't.
Same question for you guys. Yeah.
I was an assistant on the film side and the television side, because I was an assistant season 4 for Buffy.
Oh, that's right.
And I think you learn a language. That's the thing that happens is, you know, you get to learn the language without being put on the spot. And
just completely.
The good thing is you're always going to be nervous when you do the new thing. So when you finally make it as a staff writer, or you finally get your first pilot made, that's when you realize how much you ingest it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, sure. And that's, you know, that's just the thing. It's like there's a particular language that you can have, a conversation you can have, because you've heard all of those things safely.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the best part, I thought.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You're sort of comfortable in the world
yeah.
that you're all of a sudden have there are expectations yeah. of you.
And you learn how to you learn structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you learn how to write to a studio's liking.
Right.
You know, how to navigate things that you wouldn't, no matter how many specs you write, if you hadn't gone through that process, it would be brand new to you the first time you did it. Whereas, you know, working on Buffy, you know, I was there when Joss did Hush.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally saw him walk the stages, the studio, the lot, formulating the idea, and then he kind of did like a half outline, and then boom, there's a script. But wow. He would come out and talk to his assistant. He would come out and talk to other people, and you would hear the process, and it became familiar to you.
Sure.
You know, so that was the benefit for me.
That's really interesting.
The note on language, I think, is so important, especially like in comedy. Like, obviously, I knew for a long time I wanted to write comedy. And people have been telling me, like, oh, you should take improv or something. And I was like, I went to grad school. I was like, I don't need more classes.
You tell but me then, who told you that.
Exactly. Those, a bunch yeah, of assholes.
Who the hell is old? Yeah, it's probably Matt Nick.
So many smart idiots out there. But, like, the first day on Happy Endings, that evening, my first day on the job, I went home and signed up for improv classes. Because wow. I was like, oh, fuck, I don't know what the words they're using are. Because they're just
that's so
there's
funny.
A lingo about comedy that I was not as familiar with as I thought I was, yeah. and I just learned more of that.
And that room had heavy hitters too.
Yeah,
those
it's like UCB all stars. Yeah, yeah. So it was very intimidating.
That's really wow. interesting.
There is a comedy writers' room lingo for
yeah.
sure,
mm-hmm.
and I had never been in a comedy writers' room before. I was a staff writer, so I
yeah.
just had to kind of like learn it painfully that year, and just
yeah.
you know learn the horrible pain of silence of your of like,
your
pitch being
nope,
met with
nobody
silence.
Nobody likes. Oh, okay.
And it's like,
okay,
oh,
well,
you're 26, and you're just like you go home and just think about it all night.
Oh.
So that's bad. But I think I agree that when you're an assistant, just learning the way people talk to each other. I mean, because I was never really an assistant on a production, on a TV production like you were, but we got to like hear how executives talk to agents and how agents talk, you know, and how executives talk to writers
yeah.
and also I think, well, two things. Being a casting assistant is actually, I will say this, anybody who ever wants to be an actor, go get a job in a casting office first.
For real.
Because literally, and this is back in the days when headshots were physically mailed, you know, by casting,
yeah.
by agents into casting offices. And for Forrest Gump, we had this, I mean, this is not a big room. This room would be literally filled with fucking manila envelopes, you know, inches thick. The sheer number of people who want to be an actor, you can't possibly understand it until you've worked at a casting office.
You see these people.
And then just on like the assistant job that Charles and I did, just that thing of it's almost like a culture. It's almost like learning
yeah.
a new culture, which, you know, we both came from the Midwest, and you know what I mean? Like just the way people talk to each other in Hollywood and the way phone calls end the second they're over, they just end.
Yeah.
Like that thing. And it's just like, okay, bye. Click. You know, like that. It's like,
yeah, I'm good.
And then you click. And then you like try to
how
do that with
rude.
Your mom and it just doesn't work. It's
yeah,
like, okay, we're done.
Oh, yeah. The phone rings.
The phone disconnected. What happened?
Yeah.
Did you just fucking hang up on me? Sorry, Mom.
I wanted to diesel on for 5 more minutes.
Sorry, Mom. I'm rolling calls.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Just that, even just knowing rolling
roll
calls.
Your,
like,
yeah.
that's a thing. You know, you don't know that until, you know, they're like, oh, guess what? If somebody calls you at 7:12, they're like on their way into a dinner. Make it fucking fast.
Yep.
So that's stuff
funny.
Like that, you know, just be brief.
Sure.
And you learn most of the scenes
click.
That
just
you wrote.
Ben Wexler just hung up on us.
Yeah, you learn that most of the scenes that you wrote that were, you know, character strong are really bullshit.
Yeah.
Scene doesn't need to be 4 pages.
I want to talk about actual scripting stuff, the actual writing stuff, like, sort of the same question. Like, what did you learn in those early years, whether it was reading scripts or writing your own scripts, that, you know, is good advice for new writers? How can they make their scripts look like professional scripts?
I can't emphasize enough how many writers, people who call themselves writers, don't read.
Yeah.
They, when you're an assistant, like, I read 7 when it was trying to be set up. I read James and the Giant Peach. I read, you know, all the stuff that Touchstone was putting out, you get to read the people that you go to see that you hope to emulate. You get to see their process. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, it's not as simple as knowing the many incarnations of 26 letters. Mm-hmm. So you have to... And now scripts are so much easily
accessed. They're more accessible.
Thank you. That you learn by reading.
Yeah.
You read Steve's Alien, you're going to know how to write a better scene than you did not reading Steve's Alien.
That's different to watching the movie.
It's way different from watching the movie. I think that's an important
distinction. Even, frankly, the way things are conveyed in stage directions, mm-hmm. that's the kind of stuff you just wouldn't know if you've never read scripts.
Really
and you read bad ones and decent mm-hmm. ones and great ones, and you see how the great ones is like there's this economy of just, you know, it's like you're watching a scene, mm-hmm. you know, and it's popping off the page in that way, and mm-hmm. hopefully you learn to emulate that. That's really true.
I remember coverage for The Untouchables slamming it, you know, but you got to see the draft. You know, I still have the first draft of Empire Strikes Back and Raiders and how they're so different from what became the movie. You know, you learn that there's a process. And, you know, people nowadays, you know, I'll go talk to screenwriting classes. They can't even name screenwriters, much less... they haven't read mm-hmm. material.
And that's so crazy to me that people don't realize that, you know, if you're watching a show and you love the show, there are scripts of that show that exist and you want to write for that show, so go find those scripts.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the number of times that people are like, well, how do I get a script? And I'm like, Google it. You'll find it.
Yeah. That was another helpful thing at the time about being an assistant was that you could then call an agent's assistant.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I want to write a Larry Sanders spec. Can you get me as many Larry Sanders scripts?
Yeah.
And not just what you tape off a TV, which is also
the
helpful. But like, can you get me and I would get stacks and stacks of that show script, everything, you know, all the time. And I don't know how I would have done that if I didn't have the assistant job. Because it was like, you know, at the time it wasn't, you couldn't just go on the internet and there's this database of, you know what I mean? Like, but that was super helpful.
Yeah.
And you quickly get a sense of, oh, this is how they write their
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about being an assistant, going back to what he just said, is you got to watch a career. And you learn by watching other people's careers. When we were assistants, what's the guy that wrote Con Air and eventually be things
Scott,
to do?
Rosenberg?
Yes.
Yeah.
You got to see his career grow.
Interesting.
And so you'd see the trades, you'd see what he was writing, you'd read what he was writing, you'd hear people who knew him. And you got to understand how he was putting together his career. And those are choice things to grasp from as well as you're trying to build your career. Because it's been done before. That's the thing that people just forget. It's been done before. Just find someone who's closest to mm-hmm. you or who you'd like to emulate. Follow them.
Yeah, I remember hearing that advice when looking for agents and managers. People said, like, find the writers that you...
Totally.
...whose career you would like to have and see who their reps are and see if you can get in with those reps. I mean, mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense to me. What are mistakes that writers make on the page? What are frequent mistakes?
Misspelling?
Yes. Typos are a killer.
Yeah.
Like, especially if there is a typo in the first five pages, I'm just kind of like...
It rankles you.
Yeah, it really does.
We might all be nerds in that regard, but that fucking rankles
you. Your showrunner is going to be a nerd.
Yeah, often.
You know?
Or it's just kind of like it tells you a lot about mm-hmm. you didn't take
Care.
The time.
It's the last line, because you have... programs that will make your script look like another script.
Yeah.
So the only thing that's left is what you're putting on the page.
Yeah.
Right.
And usually it turns
that's
out to be
really
typos.
True. Nobody says that, too. And I'll say that to people.
All the time.
Or like to an agent and be like, tell your writer to get their script proofed.
100%.
Give it to somebody who knows
I was
grammar.
Like the wall, like when I was working for Hillary Winston and she was staffing her show, there was a new writer she was interested in who was like, rep by CAA, hot new writer, and sent in a script. And I was reading everything before giving it to her, which also helped me learn so much. I read every sample that came through that door. Yeah. And one of them I was reading and it was like, page one, there was a typo. So I emailed and I was like, I refuse to give this to Hillary with the please change this.
Yeah.
Get your writer to
and that then reflects on you.
Yes, I was like, I can't do that. And so, and then we went back twice, and I was like, I think, like, again, it came back with another time. And I was just like, I don't know if this person's serious. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know what to do for you, but it's just, it's very infuriating to see when someone has been like, you know, I care so much about this and I want this job so badly. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I'm dying to be a writer. And then it's like, but I didn't have the care to like, you know, look it over one more
time. Also all the other stuff.
I
mean, like, well,
like railing about typos. Yeah. It is like so.
And it's one of a million things.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so, so what are those other
The four-page monologue.
It's true.
Yes.
And just like not leaving out the boring parts. It's, you know, like there, I got a script once from a guy and it was like, it was a pilot. It was an original pilot. And it started on sort of like, this is me. I'm about to be born. Literally.
Oh, literally.
And then showed this character's birth. And then like, and then by, you know, page 27 or so of 32, it finally got to, and now I'm coming out to Hollywood to be a PA. And I'm kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like that's what this show is. It's you're in like, and so I think, you know, this was a guy who had given me, he had been a PA on the show, as you may have gathered.
Of course.
And I was like, okay, gently, you should write another script. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you should write another, you should come up with another idea for a show that's not about you coming out to, you know, be a PA. Cause no, but also like, and then when you do that, cut the first 27 pages.
And that,
you know what I mean? Like,
I would say that identifies another problem is people saving the cool thing for the last three pages. It's like most people are not getting to that. And even though there's never a world in which a script about being a Hollywood PA is that fascinating, I do think that like if that's the show you're trying to tell, that needs to be at the front, not at the end.
Don't do that.
I just wrote a PA script.
Well, but I mean, sorry, it's probably very good. I'd turn on a dime. I'm sure it's great.
I stuck to my guns like an asshole.
No, just don't steal my bike, all right?
And listen, not like we don't all make the mistakes.
Of course.
But you just have to be proactive in protecting yourself. I believe that most pilots, when you write them, after you finish your first draft, cut out the first 15 pages. Hmm. Just take them, drop them in the trash, and then read your script from that point on. Mm-hmm. Usually that's where it gets interesting.
Well, there's usually so much throat clearing, right?
Yes. And I don't need to know.
Including on this podcast.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't need to know that in the corner of the apartment is the statue that no one will ever look at. I don't need to know that he is a man of means and wealth. And you can tell by looking at his suit that he cuts a certain figure.
The dialogue.
Just get to the goddamn thing.
You know, you told me, Charles told me something long, long, long time ago. And I've,
in the galaxy.
Yeah. No, and I've remembered it ever since, which is you said you weren't giving advice. You just said about yourself. It's usually, I usually have to write a draft or two before I even know what the thing's about.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing that, and you weren't trying to, that was just you talking about your own process. And ever since, I've found it to be very, very true of my thing, too, where it's just like, sometimes you have to get the whole story out on paper to even have a sense of like, oh, okay, where's the juice in this thing? And you have to, and I think that's a big, I mean, probably a, I could crystallize this to say that a mistake a lot of writers make is they don't rewrite enough. You know, is that The good stuff happens in the later drafts. You know, I mean, a lot of the best stuff happens after you've, you know, just taken a sledgehammer to what you've done. And people, I think that's probably to me, if I had to shorthand the difference between a professional and an amateur, it's that. Yeah. It's that the amateur thinks the first draft is the one to show.
Right.
And it's not.
And they hold on to it forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After you write your first script, write a second.
Yeah. Don't be precious.
Yeah.
You're not, more than likely, you're not going to be that person that ends up on the front of Variety.
Yeah.
Because you sold.
I got
your
hired
first
on like my ninth script.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, not ninth draft, like ninth script, you know, ninth script that each of which had nine drafts, you know, or whatever, 20 drafts. It's like, that's when you're talking about doing, when you, Amy, are talking about doing five pilots a quarter and three screenplays. It's like that, you get good after about 10 or 20 scripts.
Yeah. It's the 10,000 hours thing. Yeah. It's like you have to take those hours, whether it's in school or it's not. You know, it's like you still have to take those out.
Yeah.
And even on each script, I almost think that it's like, I don't know, like 5,000. But like, it's like you even start the script and it's bad.
Yeah.
And you finish it and it's bad. And
everyone
then you get notes
like
and give notes.
Starting
and,
new.
Yeah.
In every an awful way.
An awful way.
Another thing I'd suggest, too, is to attack other disciplines, other
this
forms of writing.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a TV writer, write a feature. If you're a feature writer and a television writer, write a short story, write a play.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to learn a new form. And in learning the new form, you know how you learn different ways to attack the old one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even in those, I think I misspoke earlier and said I had 7 pilots. I meant to say 7 originals when I started.
Okay.
And 2 were features, 2 were plays. 1 was a short story that was staffing, you know, like because they were, everyone wants to read short stories now. So I had one of those. And then I had 3 or 4, whatever the number is, left pilots. So it was like writing other things made me better at the thing that I loved the most. And then also it helps give your brain a little bit of a break. Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah. But it does tend to put into focus the things that make a TV script a TV script.
Yeah.
I
think that is good advice.
Yeah, Milch hired me to be his apprentice.
David Milch?
Yes.
Heard of him.
I feel...
You can laugh out loud.
I'm going to pick myself up now. David Milch, but see, then when you say the rest of
sorry,
it, it
I'm
sounds
sorry.
Just
I'm
as
sorry.
Asshole.
I should just let you talk.
David Milch, creator of...
I shouldn't give you shit.
NYPD Blue, Deadwood.
He did a lot of great stuff.
Yeah. Read my specs, hired me off of some short stories that I wrote.
Interesting.
Third Watch read my specs, hired me off of a short film that I wrote.
Right.
Because you get so tired of reading those
reading
specs that you want something a little outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
As a showrunner, to attach yourself to say, oh, look, the writer's doing other things.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I would suggest that.
No, it is a good idea.
I had a little monologue packet from many, many years of doing that show, Sit and Spin, which was one of many, like, you know, hey, are you a self-involved Hollywood writer who wants to get up on stage, you know, for 7 minutes?
Am I?
Yeah. Am I ever?
We haven't
are you talking directly to me?
We haven't invented podcasts yet, so
yeah,
come to this.
Hey, busy waiting around for podcasts to get invented? Well, guess what? But, and I got hired so many times off of that packet of monologues.
Really?
Because first of all, it's like, they take 3 minutes to read,
right.
So you can like, you know, and that's another thing you learn when you're an assistant is like, they don't spend a lot of time, you know, their attention spans aren't that long. So that helps. Yeah. And, that was spectacular to have.
That was Ben that said that.
Oh, and you know, I should also
talk about attention spans.
Ben Wexler.
Yes.
You know, Charles,
I want nothing to do
you know, Charles, when I was, when I was staffing the comedians, which is one of my credits, I
prefer. Can we cut that out? I prefer if we don't name any of your credits.
Which
he'll snake them all in.
I know. Once the doors open,
it was shortly after Arrested Development and Community, a show I did, but before The Grinders. I hired a lot of people off of their web series and their web shows and stuff like that, and you know, it worked out in some cases, and to be honest, it kind of didn't work out in some other cases for the reasons we were talking about with specs, which is you can make a great web series that's your voice, and it's hilarious and it's awesome and you're awesome, but you don't necessarily get the voice of this show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, it was like they were short and digestible, and they showed that these people were enterprising and doing other stuff, and I like that.
You can at least get a feel for comedy, too. Like, especially if you're staffing a comedy and looking at these comedic shorts, like that's at least a good measuring.
Yeah, even my...
I guess the point is I have credits.
That was his point?
Well, we're still going to cut that out.
A short drink of water. Yeah.
Husband.
Father.
Many credits.
American.
You guys, we have to start to wrap up. I apologize.
What?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Will you come back?
Yeah. I'm going to check the times on all of the podcasts.
You can't get them to leave.
He was actually putting his hand such that he couldn't see me and Charles.
Amy, they can't hear me.
Great, I'm glad to hear.
I want to know what you guys are watching on TV. You guys love TV. I didn't mean to say that sarcastic. Oh, you guys love TV.
I think he's mad about it.
Yeah. What are you watching these days? What are you enjoying? What are you excited about? What is inspiring to you? Ben, we'll start with you.
I'm always late on stuff, so I just watched Stranger Things. Thought it was great. You know, I'm pretty excited about the new season of The Americans, which I've always loved. And you know, I mean, I don't know. Like, Veep is the best comedy on TV. I'm kind of not saying anything new, but
it doesn't have to be new.
Yeah,
just be excited.
I will say the one thing I will say about Veep, and this is just a shout out to Dave Mandel, who I know a little bit and admire a lot, which is that for somebody to take over the best comedy on television, which is like a auteur driven, you know, like Armando Iannucci was an actual genius making a genius show, and to make it slightly better,
I agree,
is crazy. Mandel is a genius.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible. Happen.
Yeah.
Charles, what are you watching?
Charles is just looking at me with just anger.
Contempt.
I watch anything that pays my bills. Shout out to the people who pay my bills.
You get on board with those real quick.
I religiously watch The Flash. And because it's just, as a black person, the fact that Barry Allen's stepdad is black, and it's never mentioned.
No.
And the woman he loves is black, and it's never mentioned. But it's, and the guy who helps them is of another race. And it's what I always thought television and cinema should be. I get a kick out of watching that show.
Mm-hmm. You know. And they're having a good time.
And they're having a great time.
They're doing a solid job.
And they do a whole lot of special effects that make the 12-year-old me go, if you miss that show, I'm going to be mad at you today.
Did you watch him punch a gorilla this week?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Wait, did you see the gorillas lined up?
Yeah, it was incredible.
Right? I watch it. I'm totally like Rerun King because we grew up in...
Oh, man.
The Golden Channel 32
and
Channel 44. You know, we always catch stuff.
I'm showing Brady Bunch to my kids.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome.
What do they think of it?
Oh, they love it.
Do they?
They love it.
Do they think it's a new show?
They think Alice is hilarious. They don't think it's a new show.
Okay, they're like, this is very dated.
By the way, the clothes, man. Oh, my God.
Amazing.
They are so good. But
Like those fashions are back.
But by the way, just to get back to take a moment for once, not to praise myself, but to praise Charles.
I will list all of his credits.
No, you made a movie called Things Never Said, which was to your point about like a movie that's not about race that happens to have, you know, a lot of African American like characters. And I think I went to several of your screenings and you were talking about your process for that, and I thought that was so cool and was such a like great in a movie that I otherwise loved on the merits, like that was just sort of you made this work of art that was just sort of like saying so much without being about, you know,
right.
It's like I wish there was more of that on TV and in movies. And
it feels like it's coming because like when I watch Insecure, I think of Lucy.
It's a great example.
And
people living their lives.
You know, my whole thing. This is an actual conversation. I'll make it real quick. The one semester that I was in college, 48 Hours had just come out, or within like 6 months, and this guy, a white guy, comes in and he says, you know, if I ever do a movie like 48 Hours, I'm going to have to find black writers. And I said, there were no black writers on the movie. It was Eddie bringing what he is to the movie. And that's kind of what it should be when you're making movies, because I look at movies being a kid from an all-black neighborhood, mostly black city. I never sat there and thought, I can't do that because all those people are white. I would just say, well, what's the black version? You know, and it might not be different at all, but it's just for people of color? Or what's the Asian version? Or what's the, because my first hero was Bruce Lee. So it's like, you know, my mother would go come downstairs and what's that Asian man doing on the wall? That's the coolest dude on the planet.
I was obsessed with Jackie Chan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, obsessed.
And so in making the movie was particular. The movie, if I put a bunch of black people in it, it's a black movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the story, it's funny because everything that cinephiles talk about when they're talking about foreign cinema, they won't apply to people who live in their same cities and states.
Yeah.
And we're, the people of color are the other. But they'll go out and come back from watching a foreign film and they'd be like, oh, it's genius and it's universal, but it's so relatable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's frustrating.
You know,
which is why it's really heartening right now to see Jordan Peele's movie.
Yes.
Which is about race, but it's also so a horror movie and so many other things getting just massive critical acclaim. Yeah.
And I think television is going to really, really help with that blend.
Mm-hmm.
More so than features.
I think you're right.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, features is sort of self-selecting, right? It's not immediately in your home.
Yeah.
Whereas TV, we live with these people, which is what we said for years, and it's nice to not live with, you know, the cast of Friends for a change.
Yeah.
Very quickly, Amy, what are you watching on TV?
Yeah, I mean, even off that, I recently was on MoveOn.org being very political, and was looking up people's petitions, and someone had a small petition to help bring black shows to Netflix, and I didn't realize that, like, The Cosby Show, like, well, I mean, The Cosby Show is contentious now, but, like, all of those shows from the late 80s and early 90s are not available in streaming, and I got really mad, and so I went on Amazon and bought Living Single and Girlfriends, so that's what I've been watching. Like, I've been watching season one of Living Single and Girlfriends.
How do they hold up?
Amazing. I will say, Girlfriends, it feels almost, like, modern. It's like, I mean, the first episode is about a guy who sucks toes and, like, is it okay that you want to have a sexual relationship with this dude who sucks toes? So it, like, weirdly feels modern, but Girlfriends, or Living Single does feel a little bit dated.
Sure.
It's mostly the shoulder pads on Quentin.
But I read somewhere that NBC said, how can we get our own version of Living Single? And that became Friends.
Exactly. And that's what's frustrating is, like, I watch it and I'm like, this is Friends. You know, it's a version of Friends, but they, you know, one of them went on for 92 seasons and the other one didn't. But yeah.
They didn't, showed.
Yeah, they
those
didn't
92 seasons.
Oh, by the end, it was like, Ross, you're not cool. Like, stop trying to be cool.
Your grandpa.
Yeah.
You guys, thank you so much for being here. Let's do this again sometime, please.
That was great.
Very fun.
Cool.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.